It's the Pocket Show on the British Tech Network. Welcome. Welcome, one and all. It's been a few weeks. It's been a fun few weeks. We've had my other shows kind of getting in the way and birthdays and all that kind of stuff. So I think we're a few days behind where we should be. We should have been back with you at least 3 or 4 days ago. And then we had that whole mix-up last month. But it's all awesome. We're here now. And I have a fantastic panel to chat with you around the world of Pocket stuff. And it's a sort of a preview show because all three platforms have sort of got some stuff they've recently announced or are about to announce in some cases. So lots and lots of rumours and guesswork will be done in this show. There will be no hard facts in this show, ladies and gentlemen. If you're looking for hard facts, you're listening to the wrong show. But if you're looking for some entertaining rumours and theories, then this is the right place. And to join me in those rumours and theories, we have Mr. James Hart. How are you this evening, sir?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you, despite all attempts of the M1 to stop me from getting home, as pretty much per normal. Autumn turns up, October, bang, autumn, rain, and then 6 miles of queue on the M1.
Yeah.
And that's not because anybody's crashed or anything, it's because people like to, I don't know, drive slowly in the rain.
Yeah. It comfortably adds 20 minutes on my journey. If I see it's raining when I leave the office,
Yeah, that's it. And you just go, well, should I stay in the office until it calms down a bit, or should I just go now and, sod it?
Yeah.
I went, and it was awful, but I made it home, had some tea, and now I'm talking to you lovely people, so what more could I want?
Yes, indeed. It's lovely to have you here, and I'm glad you got here safe, albeit a bit damp in the summer. We also have Steve Sandy from the unofficial Apple weblog. How are you tonight, good sir? Or today it'll be for you.
Yeah, it's afternoon for me, and It's just wonderful here. It's I'm looking out. The trees are bright yellow.
Nice.
Kind of the leaves are changing. It's beautiful out here. No rain yet.
Yes. I forget whereabouts in those United States you are. You're in the West Coast, aren't you?
Actually, kind of in the whatever the heck you want to call it. The Rocky Mountain region.
Oh,
we're,
right.
In Denver.
Right. Okay. I didn't realize you were in Denver. All right, okay. We've maybe had this conversation before. Very possible.
Well, if you're like me, you've got a really short memory, and you know, you could tell me Denver today, you know, 5 minutes ago, and I'd totally forget it. It just happens.
Indeed. And finally joining us this evening is Mr. Ewan Rankin.
Bonsoir.
Who has been invited back despite the controversy he caused in the last time he was in the Pocket Show.
Yes, me and Alison had a very, very special exchange after that.
Yes, we're not going to touch that one, though. We're just going to move on. How are you tonight?
I'm all right, mate. I'm all right. Good. I've got to say, I did some work in Michigan a few years ago, and for about the next 2 weeks, the drive from Detroit to Lansing is about as good as it gets for colour. You will never see more shades of red and brown. It is the most gorgeous thing, just driving through the forest there. And the thing is, there's enough wilderness fairly close to a lot of towns in America, so you should see. It is the time to get out with your camera, no question.
Detroit to where? I don't think I'd ever heard that other.
Detroit to Lansing.
Lansing, where
Tech Smith are, actually.
All right, okay.
I know Lansing very well.
Is that the kind of
Grand Rapids?
Detroit, the Denver type area, is that? Sorry, my geography of America is horrendous.
Michigan. That's in the state of Michigan, mate.
Right, okay. Okay.
It's the one next to Lake Michigan, which is like a sea.
Oh, no, Chicago's there. Yeah, I know. That's
the one. Chicago's the other side of Lake Michigan.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
But flying to Chicago is like flying over the sea. You get 30 miles up and you still can't see any land.
Yeah. I did a stopover in Chicago on the way to Florida a couple of years ago. And I remember us it's kind of going over land and then looking out the window and they were kind of saying we were landing in the next half hour and thinking, no, we clearly are not over land.
Yeah.
I think somebody's going the wrong way. Yeah, it was all good.
Which kind of puts in perspective how tiny the UK is, because you can be flying over the English Channel and they'll be saying, we'll be landing in 20 minutes. What do you mean 20 minutes? We've got Norfolk to do yet.
Which actually... Well, the bit from Norfolk to the continent is a lot further than...
Yeah, I guess.
From Kent to over Le Mans.
Maybe it went the wrong way then. I don't know.
Yeah, and you could blink and miss Scotland and land in Shetland. You wouldn't even know you were passing us. Absolutely no idea. Anyway, enough of geography. We started the last pocket show just blathering about TVs, and this one has all been about the geography of the United States.
No, it was about colours. Go and take some pictures, because the time of year that it is, UK or US, you won't get better, and it'll be gone in 2 weeks. It'll be absolutely nothing. It'll be bare branches.
And don't forget that the golden hour is lunchtime.
Golden hour is lunchtime?
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
For taking photographs?
Yeah, all the professionals tell you that. Isn't that right, Ewan?
Well, it depends what kind of picture you want, really. I mean, if you're looking for dusk, no, it's pretty useless.
I'm not a photographer.
Get the horse for that course. No, I mean, you'll tend to find, actually, the thing that's nice as well this time of year is because you've got a lot of cloud cover, that acts as a natural diffuser. So, you know, strong sunlight's, it's all very well having a lot of light, but sometimes it's nice to have just a bright overcast day because it acts like a natural diffuser over everything and you get much better colours.
I've got a whole Flickr album of drizzle.
Everybody in the UK has that. Anyway, so we're going to start off the show just a little correction from the last show. So as I just alluded to, we spent quite a bit of time talking about TVs, and subsequently, in an effort to try and crowbar a connection into the show topic, we talked about apps that control your TVs, and I quite wrongly, although I argue that I didn't actually realise this was the case at the time, said that Sky didn't have an app that you could control the Skybox with. So Sky, for our American listeners, is basically a service. I guess it's kind of like Comcast, I guess, in which they produce all of our TV shows, and they show us a whole bunch of American TV shows as well, and they package it all up, and they give you a box and a card that you plug in, and it's satellite television, basically. And I incorrectly said that the app didn't allow you to control your box, and I was corrected rightly by Darren Griffin and Scott Small following listening to the show, and I was blown away. And I have to say, I've started using the app now because they told me about this, and I'm blown away with it. It works. I was not expecting this. Effectively, the Sky Plus app, it's absolutely free. You obviously need a subscription to Sky for it to work, but the app's free itself. You have a little interface that allows you to scroll through your planner and everything like that. Just you tap on a TV show and it comes up and says, so do you want to watch this just now? Do you want to record it, or do you want to download it for later? You hit watch and it just bump, changes the channel on the TV. There's quite a nice little touch interface for fast-forwarding and rewinding a TV show. So the Sky Plus app, if you've got Sky and you have your box connected into your local network, that's important, either through a Cat5 or through the little Wi-Fi box that looks like an Apple TV or a smaller version of the Apple TV. It's definitely worth it. And actually, sorry, I should say Ewan as well. You joined that conversation and correctly pointed out that you could actually do that too.
Yeah, but you can also do remote setting and recording from your iOS app.
Providing, even if you're out the house.
Yeah, with the right IP, external IP input and that kind of stuff. So,
You just need your Sky account for it. That did that, because I think it's done that for a while. This has been a new thing that I didn't know about. But yeah, so even if you're out the house, as long as you're logged into your Sky app on your Sky account, so the one that you log into your Sky email or whatever with, you can remotely set things to record. So if you're at the house and you remember that your favourite, you know, Downton Abbey or the Big British Bake Off or whatever most people watch on TV these days is starting, you can just open the app up and hit record and it'll record in your home box. I think there's a little bit of a delay there, though. So if you're out of the house, it has to send the signal back and whatnot. But I'm really impressed with it. And I actually have to say, since Darren, Scott and Ewan all told me about this, it's been the primary way that I've been controlling my Skybox since then. So thank you very much, guys. And if I say any other drivel in the future, please feel free to correct me. Not too much, because frankly, if you corrected every piece of drivel I said, my inbox would be permanently full and I couldn't deal with that. So just the important stuff.
So I've got to ask the question. You said Sky is somewhat analogous to Comcast over here. Does that mean that they charge you a ridiculous amount for a lousy service?
To be fair, so Sky also provide broadband and telephone service as well, which I found to be fairly shoddy, and I don't use them for that. I just use them for my TV. And actually, I found that they've been they're actually okay with the telecoms, because generally when you phone them up, you either are phoning for a problem and they will more than likely be able to have a chat to see you in the next sort of 72 hours. Or if you're not phoning for a problem, you're phoning to cancel or upgrade, and both those services are fairly painless, because generally on the cancel call you end up getting the entire package for free for 3 months, or the upgrade call, they're very quick because they want to sell you more stuff.
I always love that.
I think they're not. There is a parallel with Comcast because they're money driven.
Yes.
And if your box is out of warranty and it craps out, you have to end up cancelling to then relist with them to get a new box. So you either have to that or you pay for the box to be repaired and stuff. But we pay about £70 and there is nothing that we can't have on Sky because, I mean, the kids' channels, the movie channels, I like the sports channels and the F1 and stuff like that. So we get the top package. And I think it's £70 a month. Yeah. It's not cheap, but it's only $120-ish. For everything, yeah. That's the top package. I can't buy any more.
That's not TV. Sorry, that's only TV, though. That's not your broadband and your phone. That's just...
No, TV. Yeah. It's TV, yeah. It's movies, movies channels. There's 14 movie channels on there that are Sky channels, and then there's like...
Turner Classic Movies.
Classic movies, Channel 4 movies, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And then all the sports channels that I've got and stuff. So it's a good value. It's much better value than Comcast.
Yeah.
Anything's... a better Comcast. I won't go down
sharp
that path.
Stick in the eye.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the entire of the UK is fairly pinned down in a similar way to the states in some states with Comcast, whereby you have no choice. If you don't want the standard BBC or standard offering of your five terrestrial channels, or actually it's more than that now, Freeview, but you kind of have to pay for Sky. There's no option. In some of the bigger cities, you've got the option of Virgin TV, Virgin Cable TV, but so for example, where I am, it's quite rural. I live about 30 miles south of Edinburgh, and we have no choice. If we want a large selection of TV channels, then you have to pay for Sky. It's pretty much the only way it is. Anyway,
Sky Plus app's not available for Windows Phone, by the way.
Is it not?
No.
Really?
I thought it was, and I just checked, and it's not.
Hmm. I'm assuming it's available for Android. I can't see why it wouldn't be available for Android. That would be a serious drop the ball moment, I think, for Sky if they didn't have an Android app. But anyway, on that subject of Windows, 2 weeks ago, so just after the last show was out, Microsoft announced Windows 10. The technical preview is almost already out for the desktop, so you can already download it and play with it. You need to be signed up for the Insider program at preview.windows.com. Interestingly, Microsoft says that 68% of Windows 10 technical preview users are launching more than 7 apps per day, with somewhere around 25% of the testers probably using Windows 10 as their daily driver at 26 app launches per day. I find that quite interesting in that this product technically didn't exist 2 weeks ago. Well, it didn't exist in the public space anyway 2 weeks ago. And it seems to be ready or good enough for people to be using it as their daily machine, which, you know, you've got to have balls of steel, I think, for it to be using that early a beta version of a product for your daily use. But I thought that was very interesting. That clearly means that this has been in the pipeline for quite some time.
Well, Wrighty stuck it straight on his main machine the first day he could, and he's written a review. If you go over to the blog on BritishNetwork.com, you'll be able to read Wrighty's review of it. But I mean, his first comment was, "It's an extremely stable system."
Yep. Yeah. It's impressive. It really is. And they've kept it so quiet as well. I mean, we all knew that something was in the pipeline, obviously. It's very impressive. They've brought back the start menu, so a lot of people will be quite happy about that. I know I certainly am. I am still on Windows 7 on my gaming PC, and that's, well, for a variety of reasons, because some games aren't ready for Windows 8 yet. But the start menu, I didn't like that whole kind of... They didn't call it Metro in the end, did they? It was Metro for quite a bit of the development, but it disappeared again. They've apparently done a lot of cool things around the Snap menu. Apparently, it supports multi-screen just now. So this is the facility where if you pull something to an edge of your screen, it snaps that window to take up kind of a half or a quarter of that screen, depending on where you hover. But that only worked for single screens. But now you can actually set up multiple displays, so similar to sort of expose on a Mac. And so you can have kind of one screen that's got all of your your Twitter client and your Facebook open and things like that, and then another screen that's got Excel and I don't know, Salesforce or something like that. And you can switch backwards and forwards between the two when your boss walks past, which is quite handy. So there's a lot of guesswork going on as to why they skipped 9. And I'm just interested to see what the panel think. I know a lot of mainstream ones have sort of been thrown about, but what do you guys thought? I mean, James, do you have a theory as to why they skipped 9?
I've seen a few tweets that suggest that Windows 9 is already sort of in the code base representing Windows ME. And because there is some code in there that says if Windows 9 or Windows ME, you know what I mean? There are beliefs that because there's stuff in the stack already that may refer to Windows 9, it could get a bit confusing.
I'd also imagine that a lot of people might have been a bit lazy, and instead of writing two different if statements for Windows 95 and 98, they would have just said if Windows 9.
Absolutely, X. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's probably something in the code base that they've said, oh, we could come across some really bad stuff behaving unexpectedly rather than going horribly wrong, I'd imagine. But you can't risk it, really, because stuff that's going to be running on Windows 10 will probably be stuff that has run possibly on Windows 2000, perhaps. There's still some 32-bit software which will run on Windows 10. And if you consider that, well, that's... Oh, goodness me. Well, it's nearly 20 years since Windows 95 was out. So, they've got to be fairly cogent that everything is as it should be. I don't think that Windows... It does surprise me that they've gone straight to Windows 10, because I don't think it's going to be a huge amount of difference under the bonnet to Windows 8. It's almost like a reboot, and they're trying to present it in a slightly better way with... You know, more up-to-date functions and more of what people expect, and perhaps more of what they've stolen from other people.
The first thing I thought when I heard Windows 10, because I didn't see it, I was listening to it on a podcast when I first heard the announcement. In fact, it was our news show. It was Kyle Swagger announced it, and I heard about it there. And the first thing I thought was, this them almost trying to reboot the numbering thing to almost kind of say, right, this is a new Microsoft, it's a new Windows. Because there's quite a bit of changes in how the old Windows functioned at quite a fundamental level, in the sense that the old Windows, you had to have a different operating system for your mobile device and your desktop PC, and then you got into that whole, was it the RM? No. I forget. There was two initials.
RT.
And then that got quite complicated, and some apps were for RT that worked in a tablet, but some apps worked in a tablet but weren't for RT, and so on and so forth. So I thought, you know, is this them kind of just basically saying, right, we're just going to start at a new multiple of 10. This is ground zero, and we're going to work on from here with a new vision and a new idea. And that's why they skipped 9, because 9 sort of felt more of a succession from 8, whereas this sort of feels like somebody's going, you know what, let's just draw a line and we'll go from here.
No? I mean, if you listen to the launch video and watch the launch video, one of the things that they say there is, you know, we've got the Xbox One, and we wanted a unified system that will work for the Internet of Things through to high-level computing. So they were talking very much about unification. I think, reading between the lines of what I was seeing on that, I think they've got Nutella's got a kind of distrust.
Nutella?
Nutella, yeah.
As in the chocolate spread?
Sachin Nutella.
Nutella's, we got a show title.
I think we've already used it, you can't.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. Nutella's got got half an eye on the utter Horlicks that is Android. And I think what they want is... you know, there's 1.5 billion Windows users on a daily basis, so they're not aspiring to be Apple. But I think there's a longing eye that looks at the uptake levels that Apple has with its OSs, and apart from 8.01, of course, but I think they're looking to kind of try and get a unification, yes, but also try and get. An upgrade cycle that people won't be afraid to enter. So everything is going to 10. It doesn't matter what you're running. It doesn't matter if you've got a TV that runs on the Windows operating system, it will be running 10. And I think you'll probably find that in the core of things, maybe Xbox One will be revealed as running Windows 10 at its core level.
I know they'll say, oh, I put an extra zero on the end of it, you'll be fine. Make it Xbox 10. Oh, it doesn't work because it's O-N-E, isn't it? Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, the guy said we'd like to have gone to Windows 1, but that's kind of already been taken. but they wanted to see a unification. So the 1 is like almost not 1.0, but it's like, you know, that, well, the 1 is meant to signify a unification, a oneness of OS. Which is why everything will run 10.
Steve, are you a 100% Apple person, or do you have a Windows machine kicking about in the corner of an old dusty shed somewhere?
Not anymore. I used to do just quite a bit with Windows. I had a kind of a section of my career where I worked for a company called IBM.
Oh, and, yes.
Part of the bad deal there was they made me convert a bunch of Macintosh users, over 1,000, over to Windows 95 as one of my first projects, and that was a bad thing. So, anyway,
it's the pipe.
Yeah, Windows 95 was not good. But I, you know, Windows 7, I'd say, was probably the last version of Windows that I used on a regular basis, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a well done operating system. I really never got into Windows 8 or 8.1, so maybe I'll have to try 10 again.
You're the only one here that. Oh no, sorry, James, you also run a Windows device, don't you?
Lots.
Oh, you run you run a Windows tablet, am I right? Because you've got an Android phone.
I've got a Windows phone. No, it's the other way around. I've got Windows phone. Android I've got tablet. Windows 7, Windows. My kids have got Windows 8. So, yeah, I've got all kinds of Windowsy stuff at home.
So, is there anything in Windows 8.1? Because obviously, we know that it was a huge leap up. And there were some cases where it was bringing it sort of level with the competition. And there were some cases where it was sort of leapfrogging the competition to some degree as well. What would you like to see from this? Because there's not a lot that I can see that's been leaked about the actual phone interface. There's a lot that's kind of leaked is probably the wrong word because it's in technical preview, but there's a lot that's come out about the desktop interface. But what would you like to see in the mobile interface and the tablet interface that's not?
I think quite simply the fact it's called Windows and doesn't actually do Windows. Multi-screen stuff. I know they're trying to. Apple are already sort of moving towards that, aren't they? With what they're doing on the iPad. But it would be really good to be able to get more than one thing on the screen at once. And for it to, at the moment, the integration between Windows Phone and Windows, the thing itself, is just awful. They are years behind everybody else. I mean, plugging your phone into a Mac, you've still not got a level playing field there. You've still got two different operating systems. You can't exchange applications. You have to use iTunes as your main interface between your phone and your PC and your Mac. But it would be great if Windows could do, Microsoft could do something a little bit more, you know, on a parallel. So it could do, I mean, yeah, I get my Outlook email on my phone, but then I could do that on any portable device. I want something that I can move straight from my phone to my Windows device without having, you know, even if it was as easy as just being near a PC, flicking my finger and my Word document appearing on the screen. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm moving from one device to the other. So they're the kind of things I'm thinking of. at the moment, it pretends to be, I mean, it looks similar to, you put a Windows 8 phone next to Windows 8 and you go, oh, look, squares. And that's about as far as it goes between the parallels between the two.
Yeah. Steve, you were going to say something there?
Yeah, I was going to make a comment. You know, in terms of what you're talking about there, we're really seeing that with OS X Yosemite, the version that'll probably run out tomorrow, and what we're seeing in, of course, iOS 8 as well. And handoff, I've been running OS X Yosemite on the machine that's sitting in front of me for about a month now, and it's just been incredibly stable. But the handoff capability, being able to do that type of thing, you know, the first time my iPhone rang and I got a notification on my iMac, I just about crapped my pants. You know, it was like, what the hell is going on here, man? And being able to actually use the device in front of me, this big computer, as a phone, or have it dial my phone, or start on a document here and pick it up on the iPad. It's worked really, really well so far. I think quite a few more application developers really need to take advantage of it, but For the most part, some of the apps that I use on a daily basis, it's working great already. So,
A quick question on that. So, I've been meaning to ask somebody who was running both the desktop and the phone version. If you click on a telephone number on a web browser on your Mac, does it automatically dial on your iPhone?
I believe it does. I haven't tried it in that direction.
To that.
Actually, I'm going to give it a try right here.
Right. Let's see okay.
Here he goes.
Live.
Oh my God! Does it work?
Let's see. It's in FaceTime or audio. Oh yeah, call. You basically right click on it and it says call number using iPhone. So yeah,
that is so cool. Now you see that. That's the and once again, where Apple leads, everyone will follow.
Yeah, yeah. However, I think there's the Microsoft have got something in here that. What it looks like it's going to do, and they haven't given too much information about the user interface will adjust, but you're going to be able to buy one app that's going to work across all your devices, which I think is something that's been sorely missing. A friend of mine, Andy, who was on, he was in the Pocket Show quite some time ago. He was on one of the early episodes. And he was a staunch Windows user. He carried an Android phone, and I managed to convince him when he was buying himself a new laptop to get himself a MacBook Air. And just try out the Windows world. His wife had gotten him a tablet, an iPad for Christmas that year, and so he kind of started to dig into the Apple world a little bit. And when he got his MacBook Air, he phoned me and he's like, "Where's all my apps?" And I said, "What do you mean, where's all your apps? You've just got the thing. You don't own any apps." No. I've spent, at least £100 worth of apps on my tablet, on my iPad. How do I get them on my laptop? Oh no, hold on. No, it doesn't work like that. And he never even for a second even questioned if that was going to be the case. He just instantly assumed that the tablet operating system was part of the laptop or the desktop operating system. And so I think this idea that it's going to work across all devices could actually be quite interesting for Microsoft, I think.
Yeah,
quite interesting. We've touched a little bit on some of the iOS stuff. So we of course have got an announcement tomorrow night. By the time I get this the audio out here, it will likely be tonight, or it'll be past by the time you're hearing this. It's October the 16th, 10 a.m. Pacific, which will be 6 p.m. UK time. We are making an assumption that it will be streaming. I don't know if we've had that 100% confirmed, but recent ones have been. We'll be to a degree.
Definitely been confirmed.
Cool.
I believe it's apple.com/live. We'll get you there.
Superb. Apparently is the wrong phrase. It will be in the Apple TV because the last ones have all been in the Apple TV. A channel will appear for you tomorrow. And I'm reliably informed, albeit I chose to watch it on a browser and suffered the same problems as everybody else. I'm reliably informed that if you watch it in the Apple TV, that actually gave you the best service during all the problems in the iPhone 6 keynote, I'm told. So maybe if you have the facility, try and catch it on the Apple TV. It's going to be streamed from the company's own town hall auditorium in Cupertino. And the clue, if you want to call it that, on the invitation is it's been way too long. Now that could just be them having a little bit of a joke because it's only been a month.
And people think, oh look, the logo that they're using in the background, the multicolored rainbow line looks like an old Mac or something.
Yeah, they're bringing back the old logo. That's it.
That must be what it is.
Oh, yeah, right.
So what are we expecting, specifically in terms of Pocket-related devices or iOS-related devices? I think we can be fairly safe in saying there'll be new iPads, would you say? Do you have any more feelings?
Actually, it got leaked today, interestingly enough.
Well.
And basically what happened was a gentleman over at 9to5 Mac was looking through the iOS 8.1 iPad user guide, which Apple apparently made available. And what he found was that they have images of the Apple iPad Air 2 and the iPad Mini 3.
Nice.
And so basically, what do we know? Well, we know that both are going to have the Touch ID sensor. So you'll have that wonderful fingerprint ID capability, which... Man, I can't wait, because I'm constantly putting my thumb on my home button on my iPad and wondering why it's not unlocking. What the hell is wrong with this thing?
It feels like 1998 when you have to type in a passcode.
Yeah. And let's see, the what else do we have here? Oh, yeah, the iPad Air 2 will gain the ability to take burst photos. Whoopee. Okay. Probably both are going to be thinner, you know, better battery life. You know, big moves, big changes, probably not.
Yeah, I was chatting about this earlier on today with a chap that I work beside, and I just can't see. I mean, I can't see what they're going to do that would make me want to buy another iPad or an iPhone. And I have to say, I'm the guy who has bought almost every iteration of any, certainly any iOS device that Apple has produced to date. And up to last year, I think was the first time that I stopped. And there is just nothing about this announcement tomorrow that is in any way interesting me, I have to be honest. And I know I maybe have lost my Apple fanboy badge there, or at least been downgraded to a bronze level, but I can't.
Well, that's really strange, because if you compare that with the hype just a few weeks ago about the iPhone 6, which just went more mental than I was expecting, especially with the iPhone 6 Plus, why are they doing it so soon? I mean, obviously it's going to be the Christmas market soon, but what are they going to be doing that's so? And if they do that one more thing, and it is the big one, you're going to have egg on your face, Mr. Wheatley.
I think you've got two things, because anything new wouldn't be it's been a long time or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that's got to be a reference to an upgrade of an old product line. Well, iPad Mini and iPad Air 2, it's not been too long for those as an upgrade by any stretch of the imagination. So I think those are point upgrades that are kind of coming right at the start, if you like.
Mac Mini?
Well, the other thing that we've heard from our contact inside Apple is that there's an announcement of the big one, but that won't be available for purchase until the time the watch comes out, early Q1. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think is Mac Mini. I think Mac Mini is going to go to a tin of beans, effectively. There'll be
same
form factor as a Pro, but way, way smaller coffee cup, or, you know, thermal flask. Oh,
wouldn't that be the coolest thing?
Thermal mug thing. I think the price is going to go up significantly on it, though. But my actual thought process is one of the things that has been way too long is the
Apple printer.
Peripherals.
Oh, don't go there.
And you missed my great line, peripherals.
No.
The Magic Mouse hasn't upgraded in Christ knows how long, and the keyboards haven't changed.
So I don't want the keyboards to change. The Mac show last week when Greeny was I don't know, I think he was fishing for an argument, but...
Of course he is.
isn't that what Will Green does?
I get letters from people who think that Greeny's serious.
So just to catch you up, if anybody doesn't listen to the Mac show, Greeny, Will Green, one of our regular gentlemen on the Mac show, was saying, and I think I think this is an exact quote, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ewan, but it's blasphemy to plug in anything other than an Apple keyboard and mouse into an Apple product, and a screen, sorry, as well.
It is. He said it should be blasphemy.
Yeah, blasphemy. So I sit in the camp that I like the Apple keyboards, and to be honest, I don't want them to change. I, having said that, I'm using one of the Logitech solar powered keyboards at the moment, but they are Chiclet keys. It's effectively an Apple keyboard. It feels like an Apple keyboard.
I think you're going to get a copy of that. I think you're going to get a solar powered version.
You think an Apple version of that?
Yeah, but I'd like to think that they're going to do something radical with an input device. That'd be pretty cool. And I'd certainly like... I mean, I don't mind the Magic Mouse. It's just a bit small. If the Magic Mouse was 70% bigger, my hands would be happy.
Do you know, the first thing I do when I get a new Apple product that comes with a mouse, which actually, to be fair, hasn't been for a little while, I throw that away. And the people who make the best mice, in my opinion, are Microsoft.
Yeah, I go with that.
I
use a lot as well. Mm. Because they're £13 and they're big and they're chunky and they sit nicely in me pork sausages. So.
I have the Microsoft. It's not Bluetooth. It's Microsoft's own proprietary Bluetooth technology, because you have to put this little dongle thing into your Mac, because it doesn't work with the standard Bluetooth stuff. They call it Blue something. I can't remember what it is now. And I love those.
Is it Wave? Blue Wave or something?
Something like that, yeah. I can't remember what it is, but it's certainly not standard Bluetooth.
And when was the last time that Apple updated the Magic Trackpad?
They updated the Magic Trackpad about 4 years ago, I think.
Because that was a real success.
It's definitely been a while.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll make that actually so people like it, because it didn't really get particularly good
feedback. Well, interestingly, we had Chuck Joyner on the show on Friday on Ewan's Mac show, and he loves that, and that's all he uses. Right. And he actually asked the question, who uses a mouse anymore, to the point that suggested that everybody he speaks to uses a trackpad.
I have to say that the mouse is such an outdated way of controlling a computer. It really is ridiculous that you're moving around a little pointer. And if you want to, if you've got something at the top left hand side of the screen, and then you want to get to something at the bottom right hand side of the screen, how easy would it be to point at it rather than having to move the bloody mouse? And you've got to get it's stupid. So Apple, if you don't come out with something better than the mouse at this announcement, I'm never going to buy one of your products again.
When was the last time you bought one of their products?
I think it was my Mac Mini in 2007.
Right. Okay. It's been a long time.
it's so the keynote's for you, James. It's been
absolutely
a long time.
I'll be watching Avid. That's what it is. That's what it is. It's been directed at me. It'll say, it's been way too long, comma, James. I go, whoa.
Just to pull it back onto Pocket Realm. Sorry, Steve, you were going to say something.
Oh, I was going to say, how about having pointing devices that have built-in Touch ID?
Oh, right. Okay. So you mean like, so something almost like the Apple TV remote, almost, that's a pointing device that has Touch ID in it that you can then point it at devices. Is that what you mean?
Well, no, I'm thinking more of, okay, you walk up to your machine, it's locked, instead of typing in a password or something like that. I don't know. I have a password on all of my devices. But anyway, just put your finger on there and it authenticates you. That'll work for purchases in the Mac App Store. It'll work for purchases, with some of these other items that would, maybe use something with Apple Pay. So I don't know. I'm just throwing out some ideas. And like you said, we need to get back to Pocket stuff.
We do need to get back to Pockets, but I like that idea. Very quickly, just to kind of tie that one up, almost if it was a little device that you could sync up to anything, because it would be awesome if you could have that touch to pay for your Apple TV instead of having to type in that blasted password on that stupid little device every time. So something that you could link up to your MacBook or your Mac Pro or your Apple TV. It was almost like a Bluetooth device or something. That would be very cool. I like that idea.
Love that idea.
Love it. Cool. Anyway, back to Pockets. What's the chances that we're going to have NFC and Apple Pay in iPads tomorrow night? Absolutely none. Good. Next question.
Well, I was just wondering why wouldn't they?
Well, so I don't think they would, but it's for the same reason that I didn't think they would put a decent camera in an iPad, and it's because who on earth takes a photograph with a massive big tablet like that?
My dad.
Yes, I see tons of people all the time doing it. All the time.
I can't see people walking into a store, hey, I'm going to go to the grocery store. Let me grab my iPad and bring it with me. And I'm going to go up here and I'm going to do this thing. I don't know. I just don't see it happening.
No, I can't see why they wouldn't, but then equally, I can't see the logic in it. I can't see somebody wandering up with an iPad. But on the other hand, there are people that just have iPads.
That's true.
I mean, for example, my friend that I referred to before, who was under the impression that he could use Apple iPad apps on his laptop, he only has an iPad up until he bought the MacBook, obviously. He doesn't have an iPhone. So maybe it's for him. Ewan, who up until recently carried a Windows phone and an iPad, maybe it's for him. I don't know. I can't see it, but is it possible? The other thing that I was thinking is, are they going to go up? Because they went up to 128 for the phones. Are we going to see a 256 iPad? 256.
Oh, that would be nice. That would be beautiful.
Don't see that. Because they'd have gone to 128 last time, wouldn't they?
But they went to 128.
Yeah, but there's I think that was the preface of the upgrade to the iPhone 128. I think if they were going to do that, they'd have done the previous iPhone would have been 128.
So if they're going to do so, there's of course this rumored Pro version. Do you think that could get the 256 or even a half a terabyte?
I think that'll be an SSD, not NAND flash.
Absolutely. What I can't get over is the fact that these things have already got amazing Retina displays and they've already got really fast processors and enough memory to keep them going, RAM to keep them going. So what extra bits would you want? on your I think that's iPad what I'm struggling Mini. With. And you say yeah. like yeah. the concept of a pro, what would a pro want to do with it? I mean,
it's a size, people, I think.
What, an even bigger one than the telly?
So, no, but I think you're looking at the art interface there. People like Paul Kirkle will absolutely brick themselves for a 128 gig 12-inch drawing tool.
I guess.
Yeah.
Although musicians I've spoken to don't rate it at all for remote controlling, you know, for as a control surface, because it's flat and there are no knobs on it, and they have to keep looking at it, because if you press a button and you want to sort of keep your you have to keep your finger on the button, because otherwise you slip and the button's not there anymore because it's a couple of centimeters to the left. You know, it's not really, you know what I mean? And then for video editing, can you do video editing on it? You can probably do basic video editing on it, but you wouldn't use it as your main device. You'd get a Mac Pro.
Exactly. I mean, you can do, I've done, I don't know how many product demo videos, basically shot, edited, and uploaded from the iPad, but, you know, professional quality stuff? Hell no. No way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, you're going to get yourself a Mac Pro. So, I'm kind of asking the same question, and I'm a real fan of iPads. I sit there, and I really didn't see, or you know, I originally thought I saw the reason behind the iPad Mini. I found I never really used it all that much, and now I've kind of got this little thing called an iPhone 6 Plus. It's kind of filled its place and kind of taken over the phone, too. So that's one less device there. In terms of a larger size, I'm still, you know, I'm kind of with you there. I'm not really sure who will use it.
Yeah. Now, I mean, for me, I've completely dropped out of the whole iPad market because exactly the same as you described there. I had moved away from the iPad or... laterally the iPad Air to the iPad Mini, because that fitted what I needed, and the 6 Plus has just completely removed the need for my iPad whatsoever. It has not left my office since the day my 6 Plus arrived, and basically at the moment all it does now is runs the chat room for the shows. That's it. It's on one of those gooseneck stands, and that it just has the chat room in it, and that's it. That's all I use my iPad Mini for.
Can I ask a stupid question, please? Because I don't know. I still haven't seen an iPhone 6 Plus yet.
Okay.
There used to be two different types of apps. There was one for an iPhone and one for an iPad.
Yeah.
Do you run an iPad app on it, or do you run an iPhone app on
iPhone.
It?
iPhone.
So is it, does it scale it up, or, I mean, how does it...
So a lot of apps have kind of caught up now. There's a few that haven't yet, but they do this. I forget what it's called. What's that? Is it auto layout? They call it, Steve.
To be honest with you, I'm not sure. But anyway, you're talking about the capability of going in and having it auto resize
so it doesn't get all blocky kind of thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and a lot of developers have gone in, and what they've done is essentially tripled the resolution or the size of certain screens, so that when it sees that it's on an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, it brings up that triple resolution image, and everything looks great. Even when you're looking at something that hasn't been optimized for the 6 or 6 Plus, it still looks pretty darn good. It's an amazing screen. What is it, 416 pixels per inch or something like that?
Wow.
It's beautiful, though.
It's incredible. I love that thing, man.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, Apple's lost themselves some money because I'm not buying iPads anymore. And it's also, it saved me money in the sense that I had a SIM card in my iPad from when I was at the house, cancelled that, saved me money there. So that's how I justified the iPhone 6 Plus to my wife.
Yes. I love it. You know, all of us guys have been married for a while. We have all these wonderful methods of justifying things.
And the thing is, your wife didn't go, "You are going to trade in the iPad, aren't you?" And you.
No, we didn't actually have that conversation. I think she knows me too well. She knows that it's going to end up getting put in the big pile of my Maxium in the corner of my office. So interesting. We'll see what happens there. And there is one other thing that I just wanted to bring up, and it was actually I heard it on another podcast. I think it was on one of the Mac Observer podcasts, and I thought this was an awesome idea, though I think the chances of this happening are slim to none. There's more chance in a hologram of Steve Jobs doing the keynote than this happening. A hybrid MacBook and iPad. Now, what I mean by that is, sort of, do you know the Android Transformer machines? whereby you've got the keyboard and the iPad just kind of it becomes sort of a clamshell MacBook, but it runs iOS and you have an integrated keyboard.
I would love to see that. And I'm sorry I interrupted there, but go ahead. But I would love to see that. That would be great.
No, I mean, when the 64-bit processors came out for iPhone 5, the first thing I said at the keynote at London Mac User Group was, well, sure, that gives the ability to unify the operating system and, or at least unify the experience. And I talked to a couple of, and a lot of devs there were going, no, absolute rubbish, absolute rubbish. And I talked to Gareth, who I trust, who's quite measured, and I said, you know what, that's clearly feasible, though, isn't it? You're writing code for one device. It's not going to change anything. It's still Unix at its core. And he said, yeah, there's no reason you couldn't write for a unified device at all.
Mm. And I'll tell you what, with the Windows Surface 3, which is ostensibly exactly that, a tablet you can carry on and turn into a laptop, that would be Apple taking one massive stride ahead of them.
Swift's about.
Boom.
I think Swift's about writing for one application, and you only write once, and it's usable on all devices.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, the one thing I find, I've got a... sitting in front of me, this huge 27-inch iMac. And then I have, of course, my work machine, which is a little 13-inch MacBook Pro. Now, that 13-inch MacBook Pro, I can't count the number of times that I've gone up and touched the screen because I want to move something around on it. It drives me freaking crazy. And I would love to see that... melding of those devices. Now, on the other hand, I can recall, I think it was one of the last phone calls that Steve Jobs was on. Somebody asked about that. Are you going to, make some sort of hybrid device? Are you going to have touch screens on the MacBook line? And I think it was him, may have been Tim Cook, but, basically came out and said, no, absolutely not. Well, they've said that before. They've made changes. I would love to see them do it. Will it happen? Who knows?
Mm.
But yeah, being able to unify the operating system too, God, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, definitely would. And I think the generation that's currently growing up with touch devices is going to expect that. You see all these little kids, and my oldest daughter is 11, and she's kind of cool with keyboards and mice and things like that. But my youngest daughter, she has friends who have siblings who are kind of like 3 and 4 and something like that. My youngest daughter's 1. And all they want to do is when they see a computer or a laptop or something like that, they just touch the screen. That's their instinct. It's what they want to do. And I think the generation that's coming in and in the next sort of 5-10 years is going to be the ones that are going to university or at very least high school or something like that. And they're going to be the ones wanting to buy these products. And all they're going to want is touchscreen interfaces. They're probably still going to expect some sort of keyboard type device for inputting data, unless speech to text can get itself significantly better in the next kind of 5-10 years, which I hope so. I think that somebody somewhere in the next 5 to 10 years has got to answer that question and say, yeah, it's touch devices. It's touch
and
devices.
The thing is that the language of touch is actually, the syntax you can use, double touch, triple, double tapping. Tapping, dragging, the number of things you can actually do that people hadn't even any concept of when they made the first touchscreen device, which was resistive and you could only use one finger at once, we're so far down that road now. It makes sense. It's starting to make sense to do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Except on your telly in the lounge.
Yes. Yeah, I do not want big greasy paw prints over the front of my telly in the lounge. Yes, you're quite right. Android today, and may actually have happened while we were recording, because rumor has it was going to happen at some point this afternoon America time, which would be this evening in Britain. They were going to be announcing the Nexus 9, which alongside was going to come with Android L, which there are many, many rumors about. And there was a release trailer which confirmed that this is going to be 5.0 of the operating system, removed any theories that it might only
Lollipop.
Be 4.5. So Lollipop seems to be the big one. Also, a leaked photo has come out of supposedly a screen grab. It was leaked by EMT Leaks, stating Android 5.0 and in brackets Lion trademark, close brackets.
That's done.
Sorry?
It's done.
It's done?
Yes, yeah, it's out there. There's the Nexus 6, which is a 6-inch...
Oh, sorry. I've announced it, yes.
...cell phone.
Yep.
But that's $650.
Mm-hmm.
The Nexus 9... HTC manufactured tablet yep. is out as well. 8.9-inch tablet.
Finally, it's a Motorola phone. Yeah. Finally, it's a Motorola phone made by Google. Who would have thought it?
So have they confirmed Lollipop as well?
Lollipop's definitely the name of it as well. And also they've got the Nexus Player with a remote control unit and a gamepad just to copy Amazon.
Nice. Okay.
And I've got to say, looking at the three pictures of them, there doesn't seem to be any Google badges on them, for a start, that's easily viewable. And I'm looking at them thinking, why? Google don't sell movies, why?
Sorry, what are you saying? Why? Why is there no Google badge, or why?
It doesn't. It's not the Nexus thing is really, really faint mm-hmm. on them in the image. They're not standing out, and they're showing a picture of the TV interface. But I'm sitting thinking, well, what am I buying and from whom?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Unveils Nexus a phablet. When are we going to get over that name and just call it a phone?
They're going to run out of numbers soon as well. They've only got 8 left. Windows have got that one.
Oh, dear. Well, they'll do the same as number plates in the UK.
Yeah.
They'll go years and 6-month increments.
Oh, crumbs. Yes, I was wondering, actually, if Windows went straight for 10 to try and get Apple to move on from OS 10. Move on!
OS 11!
Yeah.
Is that a thing now?
No, 10. No, it's not. No.
No.
No, that's still not happened yet.
OS 20! Yeah. There we
yeah.
go.
Oh, yeah, I see that you've got the game controller as well, and that'll be interesting.
Made by ASUS.
Yeah, I don't know. Game controllers are quite finicky. I think it's one of those funny things, game controllers. I think you either are sitting at one end of the scale of gaming, in which case you're quite happy using a tablet or something like that for your gaming, or you're sitting at the other end and you need a nice controller, you know, like a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One. It feels really nice in your hand. So, like, we were testing out on the Gamer Show, we've been testing out the Ouya when it came out a while ago, and the thing that let that console down, among other things, was the game controller. It felt cheap, it felt a bit uncomfortable, and... I've ordered the Amazon controller as well. I don't want to turn this into the Gamer Show, just quick segue. The Amazon game controller as well for the Amazon Fire TV, and I'm just quite curious to see how that works. Because I just don't know if your casual gamer wants a controller. I could totally see why your hardcore gamer would want a controller, but then they want a decent controller, and then they would probably have an Xbox One or something. But it's by the
box. I was going to say, I don't know. I noticed that the Nexus Player, it says, has a remote control, which is good for, I don't know, waving around like a Wiimote, I guess. But, I mean, the Asus Player, whatever, that thing, it looks like it. It looks like an Xbox controller, apart from the fact it's got one fewer wobbly thing, and I think you'll find that's a technical term.
One fewer wobbly thing.
Of course the Xbox has got wobbly thing at the top left hand side, and these two are like more like a PlayStation one, aren't they?
What are we talking about? As in like the joystick?
Yeah, the gamepad thing.
So the Xbox only has one on the right hand side.
Right. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just looks like any other thing that. But with an Xbox controller, guess what? You can play an Xbox with it. With a PlayStation controller, you can play a PlayStation with it. What can you play on this thing? A telly?
Sorry, it has two joysticks. The Xbox One. I was looking at my controller. It's actually broken. No, I just looked at the other
How
one.
How many joysticks has a broken Asus got then, eh?
Yeah, sorry, what was your question, James?
So, you know, you can play an Xbox with an Xbox controller, you play on an Xbox. With a PlayStation controller, you play on a PlayStation. Mm-hmm. What do you play on this thing?
Well, it'll be plugged at the telly, and I'm assuming you'll play Android apps, so you'll be able to play...
Flappy Birds,
whatever.
With one blooming button. You don't need both wobbly things.
So I'm guessing this is, and the same with the Amazon Fire thing, I think the plan here will be, let's get this in the living room, let's give you a controller, and then let's see what happens, and give developers the platform to build some cool stuff. And then I think what will happen is, so the way that Ouya did it was actually an Android-based console, and they had an entirely separate app store. So you couldn't play Angry Birds, Flappy Birds, PMSing Birds, whatever's the next one that comes along. You couldn't play any of those. You had to only play games that somebody had actually flagged in the App Store to say that it was available for the Ouya. And I can only assume that's going to be similar for this. Or rather, I hope it isn't, but I expect
it is. I was going to say, that's a divergence that Windows and Apple are trying to avoid.
Yeah, and I guess that's possibly why in the Windows ecosystem you don't have game controllers, and in the Apple ecosystem the kind of third parties have brought in controllers, but the... it's been kind of done in a different way. It's more like, if you want to use this controller with this game, awesome, but some of them might not work and some of the buttons might not work. This to me feels more like, here's a controller, you're going to be expected to do anything. And I think it's just something about handing you a controller as opposed to attaching a controller to a device. There's sort of that more, that feeling more that you are going to be able to do everything with it because you've got this controller in your hand and you're sitting in front of your telly in your living room and you're kind of feeling like it's a console.
You see, that's the problem. I've got a problem with that. It's because my wife likes to watch the telly, and I play my consoles when she's not watching telly. Mm. If I've got one of these controllers, I'm going to want to play the telly. Like, like for example, Real Racing. Real Racing is actually a really quite a good game. I was remarkably impressed with how good quality it is. And it's like a real racing game in that I'm crap at it. And to be able to play with a real... I wonder if you could, like, play with an... Asus controller with my tablet, and that would be the holy grail for me. Obviously I'd need somewhere to put my tablet which was close enough to make it the size of a telly, so it'd have to be right up in my face. But yeah, I'm starting to think that this is a good idea now. Well done, Paul.
We'll see. It remains to be seen. Those four lights on the front there, I think, are suggesting that you can have four controllers as well.
Oh, I thought there's a battery level.
Oh, it could be a battery level. That's possible.
It looks like a funny face, actually.
It does. Yeah, it's kind of like a pig's face.
Yeah.
One with a right eye shut.
Sorry. I played too much Angry Birds, I think.
Oh, dear. So that's interesting. They've got their fire. So, they're just competing with everybody else. And, of course, Roku's in that space as well, who are now demanding extra money for being the platform for everybody. So it'll be interesting to see who wins this war for the television in the living room. For my money, at the moment, I'm really interested to see what this Amazon TV does. And it could be interesting to see if Apple brings out any updates to the Apple TV tomorrow.
That could
as well.
Be something tomorrow, too.
It could be.
Although it's been a long while.
What I'd be really interested to see if they open up the API in some way, shape, or form. And allow you to put other apps on there, because at the moment what I'd love on there is a Plex app, an iPlayer app, and an NFL Game Pass app, because none of those things I can get on there. I can stream them all from my iPad, which is fine, or my iPhone, but it's a pain in the bum. I just want those apps on my telly.
I have to say, I'm quite surprised that the iPlayer's not on there yet.
iPlayer's not on there. Yeah. No.
Very strange.
What I find really strange is that I can't get NFL on there, and NFL's an American sport, and it's an American company, and I just sort of thought that was a given. I would get that, but I don't. I have to do all sorts of craziness on my Xbox to get on there, because people at Microsoft seem to believe that if you're in the UK, you've got no interest in NFL. So that's frustrating too. But that's another gripe for another day.
Mm-hmm.
To summarise that, Android have announced that it's going to be, the next version of Android is going to be a Lollipop, and they have released the Nexus 6, which is a 6-inch quad HD display with a 13-megapixel camera, dual-facing stereo speakers for movies and gaming, and a turbocharger offering up to 6 hours of use. With only 15 minutes of charge. Oh, it's a turbocharger for the charge, I see. So that's just hot off the press from the... That's me reading on the Telegraph's website. And, of course, they've also released the Nexus 9, which is built in partnership with HTC. Soft grip back, brushed aluminium frame, 8.9-inch screen, and comes with a keyboard folio, so similar to the Surface, that attaches magnetically and folds into different angles, allowing users to rest the tablet on a lap, like a laptop.
Now, I was actually quite pleased to see that with Lollipop, I was looking at the preview sort of features of it, that they've taken some idea out of Microsoft with Windows. Windows Phone has actually got something that everything else is following on. And that's the way that it's trying to conserve battery life. I absolutely like the glance display on my phone. A tiny little bit of battery that just tells you what you need to know. I've got, for example, 6 emails, and I haven't had to switch the screen on to do that. And I think they're working in the background to make sure that the battery gets, I think there's something like 25% more battery life by using it more smartly to make it so it doesn't waste battery power. And of course, battery technology is coming on, but there's still only so much battery you can actually fit in these thinner and thinner devices. So they're working their way. I think that's brilliant. I really do think it's brilliant, because the biggest bugbear I have with any portable device is the fact the battery doesn't last long enough. I've got my phone on charge because I've used it all day. You know, it's like, oh, Yeah. All I've done is use my phone today, and it's almost out of battery, and it's only 9 o'clock at night.
See, I know my phone has got huge battery left in it, and I'm not convinced as to whether that's just because it's an iPhone 6, or probably more accurately, it's because I leave my phone charged lying on my desk all day at work. So it's possibly a mixture of column A and column B. This podcast and all the other awesome shows on the network are brought to you by the fantastic people at UK2. They are superb. I've spent quite a bit of time today. We're doing a little bit of changes, as maybe alluded in some other shows on the network. We've been doing some changes to the website, did some quite big updates and things like that. And I've been working away with a few things to do with UK2 this evening, and getting some of that stuff prepped, and it's an absolute breeze. I use them myself privately out with the network. We obviously use them for the network because they provide all the bandwidth for all the shows, and they are absolutely superb. Earlier on today, myself and Ewan were having a conversation about going back and just seeing if there's anybody that has been on shows in the past, and we have the facility to go back through every single show that's ever been produced by British Tech Network, even back in the Bagel Tech days, and have a look at those shows and see who was all on them and all that kind of stuff. And you can go back and listen to really, really early shows. I imagine that the very first gamer show is probably hilarious in a really, really, really awkward and frustrating style, because it probably was horrendous.
Think In Between Us.
It's probably pretty awful, but so UK do provide all that bandwidth. They're superb to us. They've been around for quite a few years, and they're going to be around for a bit longer. If you want to support them, just to support the network, please. And in fact, you can see many ways that you can support us. But if you head on over to BritishTechNetwork.com and head on the sponsors link on the top there, and you will then see the UK2.net link at the top of the page there, and you also see some voucher codes that you can use to get some money off some services from UK2, DNS, domain registration, all that kind of awesome stuff. If you click on the UK2 logo there, that'll take you to the UK2 site, and most importantly, clicking on that logo from our site tells UK2 that we sent you. You didn't just get these codes off of some fun little voucher code site or something like that. And also, which would be a big help, is if you go back through your account at some point in the future, once you're a customer and you want to log into your account, now and again, maybe not every time, it would be awesome if you did it every time, but I know you can't always remember that. But now and again, when you go into your account, click on the click through the British Tech Network. Just use that click through, just so the UK2 know that we sent you, because we will appreciate it. The other people to mention are the Network Union. They are an absolutely superb service. If you work for a large organization, a large company or an organization, and you deal in all sorts of awesome stuff like MPLS, VPLS, Ethernet, internet lease lines and all that kind of stuff, Network Union can help you. Now, if you are already a BT customer, it's not a case of you're moving away from BT or anything like that. Network Union just kind of come in as an extra level of support. You still have all your bills and everything like that with BT, but the Network Union kind of come in and just help you kind of get the best from your services from BT. If you use the click through there as well on our website and just give them a little bit of details about who you are and your contact details and things like that, email address and whatnot, they will maybe contact you back, but they won't use that for marketing purposes in the future. It's purely just so they can contact you for a chat about the service and chat about how they can help you. If you work for an organization and maybe you don't have much to do with this stuff, but you maybe know the guy that does, or you maybe know somebody in that department, give them a shout as well, because it helps us, even you just telling them about us, and then maybe drop an email to Network Union and just say, by the way, spoke to my manager Jimmy at work and he said he would give you a call. Tell Network Union that you did that, just so that they know that you are supporting the network and they are supporting us as well, because they do awesome stuff. They're sticking some money at the Patreon every month. It's absolutely superb. They're great guys there. So please give them a little shout, or give your boss or somebody else's boss, or you know, if you're just passing a guy in the street, just say, hey, do you use MPLS? And if they say yes, then tell them to speak to Network Union, and that will do us a massive, massive job. The third thing you can do to support us is we've got a brand new page. I just threw it together last week. It's called Support Us. So if you click, go to British Tech Network and click on Support Us, we list all the different ways that you can support the British Tech Network. Some of them involve cash, I'm afraid. It's we need money to buy stuff. You know, nobody's going to keep Ewan in his 400 socks a day habit. We need some way of supporting us for that. So we need to buy cameras, we need to buy lights and all that kind of stuff. But also, we just need to hear about you. We need you to like the shows, and we need you to tell your friends about the shows and really spread the network work out a little bit there. So if you go over to thebritishtechnetwork.com and click on the support us, and you'll see a whole bunch of stuff there that you can do to help us out. So that's stuff like Patreon. You can go on there and give us $1 a month. You can go into PayPal if you don't really like Patreon and you just want to kind of chuck some money. That's fine too. You can visit our sponsors. I've already mentioned UK2 and Network Union. Tell us about you. We need to know kind of a little bit more about our listeners. So there's a little survey there. There's no personal details or anything like that. It's just to get an understanding of who listens to the network, and so that we can kind of get some really good ads for you that actually make sense to you, because there's no point in getting crazy ads that don't make any sense to you. And also like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus, and there's a link to all of our different things there as well. And finally, I've droned on enough here, but I'm just going to mention one last thing. On the homepage the British Network, you'll see a big banner for the Northern Bash. Now, if you've come along the Southern Bash before, you'll know kind of what we're talking about here. Or if you've not, that's also fine. The Northern Bash is basically, it's on the 6th of December. It's in Scotland. It's a little town called Tweed Bank where I live. And we just hired a hall, and we're just going to stick some gaming consoles up. We'll have a show during the day. We're going to bring along some beer. We're going to get a curry at some point during the day, and it's just going to be a fun, relaxed sort of winter version of the Bash, because obviously in the Bash we get beautiful sunshine, we're having outdoor games, it's a family event and everything like this. This is more kind of a winter, it's just a bunch of people all huddled together in a town hall, drinking beer, eating curry and playing some video games till midnight. If you go onto thebritishtechnetwork.com, you can see the big banner on the homepage there to buy tickets. Underneath that, there's a button that says Find Out More. If you click on that, that gives you all sorts of information about how you get to Tweed Bank, say links to B&Bs and things like that in the area, or rather the postcode that you have to put in for a search for B&Bs, all that kind of good stuff. So just helpful information as to how you can find us. And of course, we'll be doing the Gamer Show quiz. So if you think you can beat Chiz at the Gamer Show quiz, then please feel free to come along. £5 a ticket, and bring your own beverage, be it alcoholic or non-alcoholic, that's up to you. It will be a fantastic day. You and you're coming along, aren't you?
Two, right, mate. Greeny's coming. Chris Woods is coming. They're all driving up in the car with me. I'm driving up from Birmingham on the morning, probably leaving about 7 a.m. So we've got 3 seats left in my vehicle. So if anyone wants to dive in and come up with us, they're more than welcome to share the journey with us.
Very good. Looking forward to it. It'll be an awesome day. And it's in the borders as well. So if you're planning on getting the train up, good luck to you, because there isn't a railway line for 30 miles in all directions, pretty much. There isn't a airport for 30 miles in all.
So if you want to use a railway, you're going to have to bring your own.
Exactly. So you're probably better, if you're coming down south from down south, you're probably better jumping in the car with Ewan, or making your own way in some kind of transport that you pilot by yourself or know somebody who can pilot. Of course, you come to the train station or the airport, there's taxis and things like that. And in fact, if there's enough of you that tell me that you're coming to an airport, if you can try and get there, or a train station, if you can get there at the same time, I'm sure we can sort out something and come and give you a lift down as well, if you can give us a shout. But it will be a fantastic day, no matter what. And we will try, depending on bandwidth, to do a show from there as well. But we'll see what happens. Gentlemen, do you all have a cool thing ready for us? We will start with... we'll start the way we did the intros. James, what's your cool thing for us this evening, sir?
I do. I like doing audio stuff. And for a long while, I've been looking for a half-decent audio editor for my phone. And finally, I've got one. It's called Lexis Audio Editor. Free trial I've got, which can do everything except save as MP3. And it works really well. You can sort of trim audio. You can fade. You can normalize. So you can record stuff. It's not multi-track. It's not kind of like your Audition or your Logic or anything like that. But if you want to be able to... If you're doing some field recording, you press the record button, then you sort of realize that nothing's happening, and then you go, well, how am I going to trim this down to be able to sort of email it or share it? You can do it on your phone, and it really is a very nice looking editor. So that's Lexis Audio Editor. It's available for Windows Phone and for Android as well. I think it probably originated on the Android, but they have ported it to the Windows Phone, and I'm very excited that there are more and more products actually being available for Windows Phone, because it makes it useful.
Yeah, that's really cool. So $4.49 for that. That does look quite cool, that.
Mm-hmm. But for free, you literally, it's only that you can't do MP3s with it.
Oh,
if you don't buy the free version. You can save WAVs or MP4s. So it's pretty much fully functional.
Cool. Very nice. Very good pick. Very good. Ewan, what have you got for us tonight, sir?
Well, he's done a Windows pick. He's the Android man. I'm going to do...
It was technically Android and Windows.
Okay, I'm going to do an iOS pick and say the podcast set.
We've gone bust.
I've got to say, because I stayed away from iOS for a lot of reasons, and I still sit and look back, and there's a lot of good stuff in the Windows interface that I really want to see in iOS, and it's just not there. But one of the reasons that, you know, one of the things that the original podcast application actually only stayed on my phone for 3 minutes. And then I got rid of it when it was a single download on its own, and I gotta say I really love it. It works perfectly. It downloads stuff, the music stuff as well. That's one of the big pulls that's got me back into iOS away from Windows. Was, you know, I didn't have to sit and sync my phone with my iTunes database. I can sit and download all the stuff that I've already purchased on the fly. And it plays pretty much instantly on a lot of the car journeys I've got. So I'm going to go with the podcast app. I know it sounds pretty naff, but it is really significantly improved from where I last used it.
Right.
And I did a comparison of the Windows phone with the iPhone 6, and the iPhone 6 is very good. It's certainly the better day-out camera because it physically starts faster than the Windows phone, but the Windows phone still has the edge in terms of image quality.
Yeah, I find that the iPhone 6 camera is the best camera for me because it's the one I have on me, and that's
kind of... Oh, that's such a bullshit statement.
It's not, because I don't really give a crap about photos. I just want a photo. I want a camera I want a camera. So it is a bullshit statement, but the fact of the matter is, it's the one that's in my pocket, and I want a camera that I could just take out of my pocket and take a photograph when my kid's doing something cute or doing something funny or something like that.
In which case, the iPhone is the better camera.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I care about. And I was having an argument with a chap at work the other day, and he was getting me to do all these tests because he was trying to decide what phone he wanted to buy. And he had this grid thing that was on an A4 piece of paper, and he was trying to work out if it skewed. I don't know. I don't even know what he was doing, but I was kind of playing along, frankly, because, well, he's my boss. I was taking photographs and stuff of this thing, and he was moaning about the fact that it was going off in different directions and stuff. And I was like, yeah, but I don't care. This takes awesome photographs of my kid. My 1-year-old was at the birthday party for another 1-year-old a couple of weeks ago, and they had this bubble machine. And I sat behind the bubble machine and took a video of all the kids kind of running, all these little cute little 1-year-olds that are just kind of toddling about, just walking. And they were all kind of swinging their arms and popping the bubbles and things like that. And I used the slow-mo feature in the iPhone 6. And my goodness, it is just the most beautiful video.
Yeah, the video is awesome.
I have ever shot. Every time somebody says, oh, do you like your phone? I bring out this video of these kids in these bubbles. And then I've got another video of my older daughter on one of those flying foxes. You know, I don't know if they call them flying foxes in the States, Steve. But basically the way it is...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
All right. So if you imagine like a really, really long bit of wire suspended maybe, I don't know, 12 foot above the ground, and okay, it's on a very slight incline, and the child sits on sort of a seat that's hanging from the wire, if that makes sense, on sort of little wheels, and then push themselves off. Sorry?
Death trap.
A death trap. They push themselves off, and basically this little swing just kind of shoots down this wire, and then at the end it stops. And
we call them zip slides where we are.
Zip wires, maybe?
Yeah.
Zip slides? I don't know. Anyway, my daughter was in one of them, and I took a slow-mo video of her going past, and oh, the detail, it's amazing. The slow-mo camera is incredible, and the camera itself is awesome.
And sorry, and that is what happens when you do an iOS pick.
Yeah, Paul goes off in one.
Paul turns into Kelly Gamon.
Oh, sorry.
You were the one that was complaining.
I wasn't complaining. Kelly, if you're listening, I did not complain. I moaned bitterly. I did not complain. Steve, what have you got for us, sir?
Let's see. I'd say my pick of the week has to be an app for iOS, of course, and this is Transmit for iOS. And if you're familiar with Panic's Transmit application, mm-hmm, it's a FTP client for Mac. They finally decided to come out with one for iOS, and it works beautifully. It's just absolutely great. I have occasion to send lots of photos from either an iPad or an iPhone up to a web server, and was always trying to figure out a decent way of doing it. And I tell you, having a full-fledged, really well-done FTP client in Transmit is definitely the way to go. Excellent job.
Am I right in saying that FTP really should be simpler than it currently is?
Yeah, heck yes.
Because that's the thing that always strikes me about FTP. You look at CyberDuck and FileZilla and all those kind of things. They're really fantastic applications about a process which should be friggin' easier.
Yeah.
And it's always been a real pain in the rear. Yeah, I don't understand it. But fortunately, you know, the bad part about this is the Mac version and the iOS version kind of aren't in sync right now. Eventually, you'll be able to share all of your stored FTP server information, you know, between the different platforms. But right now, that's... You know, I got to admit, it's really helping me out in terms of getting those photos up to the server. So, big thumbs up.
Very nice.
Yay, panic.
It's $9.99 in the American App Store, and it's $6.99 in the UK. So, that looks quite nice. Yeah, I like all the stuff that Panic do. Coda is very good.
Yes.
If I'm doing a lot of stuff. I have to say, I use BB Edit for kind of, I'm just tweaking something somewhere. But Coda, if I'm sitting down to actually build something, Coda's very nice. Because it has all that. I believe it has the core of Transmit inside Coda, doesn't it? It doesn't actually talk about being Transmit, but it's got an FTP client, which I expect is the guts of Transmit.
Probably.
Inside Coda, but very cool. My pick is a superb little app that I came across a couple of weeks ago, and it's called Post-it Plus. Now, on the face of it, it just looks like it's made by the people who make Post-its. And on the face of it, it just looks like it might just be a note-taking app. But my goodness, this thing is incredible. Now, my day job is I'm a UX consultant, and so for websites and things like that. So I spend, I would say, comfortably about half my time, if not 60-70%, dealing with post-it notes on a wall, shuffling stuff about, saying this piece of information should be here, building information architectures for websites and things like that. So I spend a huge amount of time with post-its. And this app, since it arrived a couple of weeks ago, has changed my life. Effectively what it is when you've stuck a whole pile of post-it notes up on a wall, and you've stood about and discussed them and stroked your mighty beard until you made a decision. And then you normally what I would do is I'd take a few photographs, then I'd wander off to like OmniGraffle or something like that, and I'd sit and meticulously recreate these post-it notes in OmniGraffle so that then I could edit them at a later date. What Post-it Plus does is it allows you to take a photograph of your wall, and then this is where the magic comes in. It detects post-it notes. So it actually comes up and says, it puts little orange squares around them and says, it looks like all these are post-it notes. Is that correct? And you say, well, yes, it is. But in fact, you've missed a couple down here. So you tap on the couple that are down the bottom, and then it goes, oh, right, didn't realize. And it highlights both of them as well. And you think, oh, that's pretty cool. What are you going to do with it now? So you move into the next screen and it takes the background away. So then all you're left with is the post-it notes with your handwritten notes on them. And then it gives you the option of how you want to organize them. So do you want to just straighten them up, neaten them up, so any that are like a little bit skew-whiff or something like that, it just straightens it back into a square, does that for you. It also gives you the option to actually just pull them all into one big grid that you can then use at a later date. And it does all this kind of stuff, pretty awesome. But then the final thing is, when you actually ask to export it, it can export it in multiple different ways. It can also allow you to go in and look at the text as well, and you can change the brightness in the text. You can turn the post-it note around. So if maybe the way that it's straightened it up is actually it straightened it sort of, I don't know, 45 degrees to the right when it needed to actually be 45 degrees to the left. You can go in and you can tweak it there as well. You can favorite certain post-it notes as well. You can export single post-it notes, perhaps just save it as an image to your camera roll, message it to somebody, send it to Twitter or Facebook, all the standard action panel stuff. You can also, if you take the entire group, what you can do with the entire group is you can also export that, and you can all sorts of options for exporting as well. So you can export that entire group, so you can share the board or export the board. You can export it to PowerPoint, PDF. You can the app that board export format or something like that, it's called, for an actual post-it app. You can export it to Excel. You can export it to a zip file that's just full of images as well. It's honestly, if you deal with post-it notes on a daily basis in your job, you need this app in your life. I believe it's iOS only at the moment, which is a bit of a shame, but yeah, it's absolutely superb. And it keeps the original one as well and tags it with your location. Obviously, if you've set location available, tags it with the location that you took the photograph and the date and the time that you took the photograph as well. It is really, really a superb app. It's crazy that it's free and that the Post-it Note guys have made it. It's the only thing it doesn't do, which I expect they're probably working hard on this, is they actually are going to read the handwriting and allow it to have editable text in it. That would be the next best thing. If it did that already, that would be mind-blowing. But at the moment, it's an awesome app. So very cool. So use Post-its, get Post-it Plus. It's awesome. All that's left for me to do is just tell you how to get in contact with us. So that's very simple. You can tweet me. I'm at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. You can email the network, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at British Tech. Please remember and go over the sponsors page just to catch up with all of our sponsors and the support us to just kind of support the network and things. That would be awesome too. And finally, Ewan, how can people get a hold of you on the network?
My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin, EwenRankin on Twitter.
And James, how can people find your dulcet tones?
Dulcet tones in type format is Syzygy, SYZYGY. I also do a city radio show on a Thursday evening. But you want to listen to The Big Show and listen to mine on a podcast, because The Big Show is really good, funny life. I'm also on Ello. Have you heard of Ello.co? No, nor have I. I'm JamH on that as well. Invitation only. And it's one of these things that's going to pretty much go the same way as app.net. It's like six people are going to go on and have a really good time and no one else is going to turn up.
Yeah, I said that to somebody the other day and then they got very defensive. App.net's still alive and kicking. There are many, many people there. Okay.
All 12 of us are fiercely defensive of it.
Yes.
Oh, I was only going to credit with them with 10.
And finally, Steve, where can people get a hold of you, sir?
You can get a hold of me on the unofficial Apple weblog at tuaw.com and also on the Twitters at Steven Sandy, STEVENSANDE.
Grand. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, it has been a pleasure to have you joining me on this dark and dreary, although probably not for some of us, winter's autumnal evening. I look forward to speaking to you all again. And to you, the listener, thank you very much for your ears. Good night.